time for the Ask the Pastor portion of our Bible study, hour number two. It's an open phone program. I'm Chuck Rathard. If you just joined us, we finished the first 16 verses in Matthew 20 there. The last will be first and the first will be last. Which means Pastor Springer should have been here in the 10 o'clock hour and Pastor Simmons should have been here now or something. I just get confused. Our numbers are 505-7850 and 1-800-730-2727. All right, let's bring on Pastor Marty Springer, pastor at, I'm going to get this wrong now, St. Paul Lutheran Church in Imperial?
Imperial/Otto. We have to keep that straight. We talked about that before.
I know. And then when it came time for me to write this down, I knew that Otto was in there somehow, and I don't know, maybe Herculaneum and who knows what.
Well, my members still like to say St. Paul's Otto, so let's just keep it at that. So they don't run.
Members happy.
I don't want to get run out of town on a rail. So
you realize, of course, that you're going to have to come here like about 8 times before I finally get this committed to memory.
Be glad to come back,
you just
Chuck.
Have
let
to
me
correct
know.
Me every time.
Absolutely.
As I said, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Anything going on at St. Paul Otto / Imperial? That you want to talk about?
Well, just our ordinary observance of Lent.
You have Wednesday services,
do
you?
We do at noon and at 7:15, and we have fellowship meals at 12:30 and at 6, and a great opportunity for fellowship after the noon service and before the evening service.
What's the address of the church?
We're at the intersection of Old Route 21 and Old Route M, like Mary, 6650 State Route 21 in Imperial, Missouri.
Now, is this a country church?
Well, this is a rural church. I don't know if I'd say.
What's the difference?
Not so much country as in farmland, that sort of thing. It used to be.
Yeah.
Now it's subdivisions and strip malls, but we're still in what I consider to be rural Jefferson County.
I got a question for you. First of all, I need you to pull that microphone up to your... Pull that microphone right up to your chin.
Okay.
Yeah,
right.
Right there. Yeah, then I don't have to run your volume so high.
All right.
Are you affiliated with a school in any way?
Actually, we are, and I'll be glad to put in a plug for our school. We belong to the Jefferson County Lutheran School Association and sponsor Christ the Vine Lutheran School in Herculaneum, Missouri.
Okay.
You mentioned Herky before, so...
Yeah. Do you have an opportunity to go into the classrooms in that school?
I do. And
is this an elementary school?
Or? Well, we began as an elementary school and then had to regroup a little bit. And it's now preschool and daycare.
Okay.
And we're hoping to add a kindergarten program right away and then build a grade at a time.
How about confirmation class? You teach confirmation class?
I do at St. Paul's. I expanded the program and we do grades 5 and 6, and I have excellent field education students from Concordia Seminary who teach the 5th and 6th grade class, and then I teach 7th and 8th, and that's our Wednesdays are set aside as Christian Education Day at St. Paul's.
I've got this section from the Post-Dispatch from Section A today, page 2, Section A, that is headlined, Casual Cursing Swamps Youth's Conversation. Now, you say that your school is basically preschool and kindergarten, so I'm pretty sure there's not too much cursing going on there. Got 5th and 6th graders in confirmation. They're probably not cussing out the preacher down there at St. Paul Otto, at least not yet. Are you exposed to this phenomenon, which is apparently becoming a little bit more prominent, where our younger people apparently are acquiring the potty mouth?
Well, funny that you should mention that, Chuck, because I'm on the road a lot, and I listen to the radio a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And... between radio and TV, I think it would be hard for children to get a good example of what to follow, because the second commandment is broken all the time. Just, again, casually, obviously not calling on his name, just looking for a filler word to use in a conversation.
Is that wrong?
Absolutely wrong. absolutely wrong. It's a violation of the commandment.
It's kind of old-fashioned, isn't it, Pastor
Springer?
Well,
then I'm old-fashioned. In fact, I wasn't at St. Paul's very long. I listened to a local country station quite a bit. Mm-hmm. And I even wrote in because one of their commercials some time ago, it's a Clear Broadcasting channel, I will say they were very sensitive to my opinion. They had a commercial in which a harried voice said, "Oh God, I'm late." You know, I wrote in, I said, you know, I just don't think that's necessary.
Well, I don't want you to name the station.
I'm not going to.
We don't want to disparage any station.
Absolutely
but,
not. That's why I didn't.
If I were to suggest that you wrote in and they looked at it and they sent you back it was a decent response, but pretty much they tossed your comments in the trash can. It's like, oh, who is this guy out at some rural church? Oh, my gosh.
By the way, they quit airing that commercial. Now, I don't know if that was me.
Now that
I'm not going to take the credit saying that it was just me, but it was obnoxious. It was like fingernails on a chalkboard. And shortly after my letter went in, the commercial went off. So I'm thankful for that. That doesn't eliminate the whole thing.
Now, you were telling me before the before we went on the air that your wife is a teacher.
Yes.
And apparently they're gracious where she teaches. They spread the flu around to as many people as possible.
They
she
definitely do.
She brought it home to you. So it's good to know that we're sharing in the church.
Absolutely.
But what grade does she teach?
She teaches third grade at Zion Lutheran School in Belleville.
Okay.
And this
and
is
they
her.
They go all the way up the eighth grade.
Yes, they do. This is her 35th year in the Missouri Synod Day School System.
We should probably get her on the phone and ask her this question.
We probably should. And her 20 plus years at Zion
is
Belleville.
Is that right? Well, then she probably has heard a few more curse words coming from children in more recent times than maybe years ago. Has she ever mentioned that this is an issue in any way?
Well, not specifically saying that. In our conversations, I remember what it was like when I was in school. And she constantly says, you know, honey, things are not like they used to be. When I was in school, if I got in trouble at school, I knew I was going to get in trouble when I got home. Mm-hmm. And the teacher was always right and the student is always wrong. And it seems that that's the exact opposite now. It's not, well, gee, what did my child do? How can I correct it? It's, teacher, what did you do to cause my child to get into trouble?
I don't want to pry into your personal business, and I don't want to pry into the personal affairs of Zion Belleville, so I'm trying to ask just a general question here. Do you know what it's like in your family for your wife, you as a husband, to be dealing with somebody who, as your wife has applied discipline, or your wife has said, this is the way we're going to do this project or this thing, to be hearing from parents who don't want little Johnny to have so much homework or don't want little Johnny to be held accountable for little Johnny's behavior. Do you know what that's like in your house?
Just the things that she shared with me. And, you know, again, I think Zion is a fine institution and I think an excellent example of a Missouri Synod Day School. And I think that they do try to support the teachers as much as possible. Again, I think it's just a different mindset among parents today. There are so many extracurricular activities that crowd in to a child's life, and my impression, and this is just my opinion now, Chuck, this is my opinion.
Sure. Well, you're entitled to your opinion.
You know, it's that...
We'll straighten you out.
That everything else is more important, that the extracurricular activities are more important than homework or school projects, that there's you know, ballet and tap and sports and all, you know, all good things, certainly all good things, but that it would seem that the priorities are a little bit off regarding education and its need to come first in a child's life. I'm not saying don't be well-rounded, but I'm saying let's set the priorities that homework and schoolwork have to come first.
If you could wave a magic wand and just change it, how would you affect change?
Oh, boy, Chuck.
I mean, I know
you're... Now you're trying to stump the pastor, I know.
Well, I know your answer is going to be impossible.
Right.
Because it would take a magic wand.
Right.
But if you could just get all the folks... You said there's a problem with parents. You didn't go to the, you didn't single out the kids and say our kids are screwed up.
I don't think they are, not by any means.
But our parents have, to be generous here, have kind of lost their way on priorities. That's what I hear you saying. If you could snap your fingers and change it with a blink, what would you do?
I think just that parents would be more interested in reassigning those priorities.
How is it that, how does it happen, do you think, that a parent would have his kid in basketball, playing in a tournament, and practicing long hours to get ready for the tournament so that the homework didn't get done? How does that happen? That doesn't...
It makes no sense to me. Now, I have to say, I'm not a big sports fan. So, you know, maybe...
Well, you're forgiven.
You know, maybe I need to look at it from that perspective. I don't know. Really, Chuck, what I think it boils down to, and I'm going to lump my generation in there too, is that we had everything given to us. You know, if we wanted it, we pretty well got it. And I think that is bleeding over into how the parents are dealing with their kids, and that they don't talk a lot about personal responsibility. They don't talk a lot about, you know, about setting those standards that unless you're going to be an NBA star, you know, and what are the chances of that? That you have to study hard and do your schoolwork and do the best you can at doing it.
Let me read a little bit from this article here in the Post-Dispatch. The headline is "Casual Cursing Swamps Youth's Conversation." Not infiltrates, not affects, but swamps. And the subheadline is "Parents Need to Model How to Talk to Adults, Experts Say." Well, we might as well just toss this aside right now because we know that that's the problem. Parents are divorcing, remarrying. Kids got a different mom or a different dad along the way. Many children are in single-parent homes. There are a lot of homes where there's no father present, so that if the law did need to be laid down about language and speech, you know, it's above mom's ability to lay down that law. So we might as well quit talking about this now because of the current state of the family. What do you say?
I agree with you, Chuck. It's unfortunate. You know, you asked before about my experience at St. Paul's. While I wouldn't use the word swamped, I do hear that infiltration. I mentioned TV and radio before, where God's name is not held sacred, where rather than it being used, called upon for help or used in a praise sense, it's a filler word in a conversation or it's a sign of exasperation. Kids hear that, and they pick up on that.
You know, and the internet and instant messaging, which you and I didn't have when we were...
Which I'm still not smart enough to do.
You know, just little text messaging, blah, 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 little one-sentence bursts. One of the short forms is OMG.
Right, which is not oh my gosh or oh my goodness.
Well, I think it's oh my gosh.
Yes, it is. It is.
So is that a violation of
I believe
the second commandment?
In the narrowest sense, it is. It definitely is. You know, again, in a narrow sense, you know, are they calling upon his name for help? Are they praising him? Or are they using that as a filler in a conversation? I keep going back to that. For lack of something better to say, I'm going to say, oh, my God. You know, and that's, I think that's wrong. It's a frivolous use of his name.
What's wrong with it?
It's a violation of the commandment. He said,
apparently we don't think it's wrong because what we're talking about here is somebody saying, oh, my God. Now, if you were to say... Now, you shouldn't be saying GD. A lot of folks are going to say, yeah, that we can't be doing that. And, you know, if I hear that come out of my son's mouth or my daughter's mouth, we're going to deal with that.
Sure, sure.
But if we say, oh, my God, you know, we're watching the Super Bowl, and oh my gee, you know, look at that pass that just happened in the Super Bowl. This is amazing. Oh, my gee. What's wrong with that?
It happens all the time, and I think that we get to the point where it doesn't affect us. Why? Well, everybody does it. Everybody does it. Then it must be okay. You know, in my confirmation class, in fact, the kids always laugh because rather than, I made the mistake one time in my early ministry of writing the GD word on the board to make a point.
Yeah.
And then somebody happened to come through the classroom and see that I had written GD on the board.
That was a bad day.
Not good. So now I refer to that as the big kahuna.
Mm.
This is what we do not want to do. We absolutely don't want to do that. And then I build down from there with the OMG, you know, oh my God. And Chuck, it is such a habit. It is a speech habit that adults get into, that kids observe and get into, and never think anything about it.
I don't think we're going to win this one.
I don't think we are either. But I think that we need to keep reminding kids, hey, don't say that. That isn't a good thing to say. You know, if I'm frustrated, I'm not going to yell out, oh, Chuck. You know, why is that? Because I don't want to disrespect your name. And that's essentially what we're doing, is we're exasperated and want to vent our frustration, and so we drag God into it.
If I hit my thumb with a hammer.
Oh, I know. I know.
And I say, God, be praised. Have I saved it?
Probably not. Not if you were thinking. And I know what you're thinking, because I'm not very handy and often slam my thumb with the hammer too. So, and I'm not saying that I haven't said it. Okay. I'm not saying that I haven't said it or thought it. But again, let's try and set that example. Let's try and set that example for our young people to follow.
And in all this discussion, we haven't talked about the proverbial, what is referred to now as F-bomb. Or if you say SOB, or any of a number of other vulgarities.
There's a whole list of them.
That's what this article is about. Particularly, I think, thanks to Hollywood, the F word is now just kind of a normal part of speech.
Ooh, and in my opinion, certainly that's not as bad as the GD, but that's another one that's like fingernails on the chalkboard.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm going to knock wood. Thankfully, none of my students have said that, at least not in my presence. Yeah. But you can't watch
TV.
They
probably know how to clean it up in your presence.
I would guess. But you can't watch TV, you know, without it being on there.
505-780-1800-730-2727. Hi, Jim. You're on the Bible study. Good morning.
Hey. Good morning, gentlemen. I'd like to ask Pastor a question. In the New Testament, the Lord says that in vain people worship him, teaching for doctrines the commandments of men. Is this covered under the third commandment, too, of thou shalt not take the name of the Lord thy God in vain, like taking Christ in anything that's either a commandment of man or something that's empty where, you know, it's not authorized to be? And another thing, when I was reading in Luther's Small Catechism, the second commandment that's in the King James Version and Exodus 20 is, thou shalt not make unto thee any graven images. How come that's not in the Small Catechism?
No. If I can, let me address that last one first. Luther felt that between the commandment and his explanation of the commandment, if you have the Small Catechism there, look at his explanation, and he just sort of rolled them together. I know that those who are not familiar with the Small Catechism and the format of the commandments often raise that point. Well, wait a minute, you're one off. You know, how come he did it that way? He felt that was the best way to write it and explain it. I don't think it's that big of a deal. I think that it is covered in there. If I can, I hope that addresses your second question. The first the first one, I think that you're making a good leap there. That instruction, in vain do they worship me, teaching the doctrines and commandments of men, I think it's important that we look at that in today's society, that I think every one of us as Christians, Lutheran Christians included, need to say, why do I believe what I believe? I tell my adult confirmands, I want you to believe this because it's in the Bible, not because Pastor Marty told you that, not because, well, I believe that because that's what my church believes. No, no. We believe that because that's what the Bible says. That's the standard by which we live. And I appreciate your question, Jim. I think that all of us need to ask that question.
I agree with you. Thank you kindly.
All right, thanks for the
call. Thanks for the call.
Thank you. Bye.
So if you were to, I don't know what the setting would be. Maybe, well, youth group. You got a youth group?
We do.
Okay. There we go. Youth group at St. Paul Auto. And kids are all waiting around. It's going to be pizza night. And Pastor Springer's not here yet, but he's due in later. And some kids standing around. And as you approach, you hear somebody drop the F-bomb. They're just hanging around outside the church waiting for the basement to be opened up for youth group. They don't know you heard it. You don't have to tell them you heard it. You could pretend that you didn't. How are you going to handle that?
I'm not going to pretend I didn't hear it. More than likely, what I would do is, at an auspicious time, I don't think I would pinch his head off right there.
Why not? Call him out. Embarrass him in front of his peers.
No, I'm not going to do that.
No, you're not going
to
do that?
I'm going to get the chance to talk to that person one-on-one and make sure that they realize that that's inappropriate in any setting, especially at church, but in any setting. And I don't think I have to get all over them in the process, but I think it is my responsibility to correct that behavior. We've got a wonderful youth group, 24 excellent kids at our youth group. I'm not saying that that isn't going to happen. The OMG situation, the OG situation has happened and has been corrected. But thankfully not the F-bomb.
When you take this person aside to confront him or her about what you heard, will it be your intention to give them another perspective, to talk about what maybe the small catechism says about it, what the Bible says about it, ask him to think it through? Or will it be your intention to put the fear of God in him so that if you ever hear it again, there's going to be trouble? I was going to say hell to pay, but then I'm not sure that maybe we can't say that either.
There was a time when I probably would have gone ballistic. And I think the more experience that I have in ministry and the more experience I have working with youth, the more I've rethought that. I don't want to put the fear of God into them. I want them to realize what God's word says primarily. And obviously, there's not a commandment that says don't drop the F-bomb. But do you know of one that says that?
There's none that I know of that says that explicitly, but you guys have a way of extrapolating that from other things that lead to that conclusion.
I think that I could convince them that that was inappropriate and that I wasn't pleased.
This article written by Melanie Glover out of Sacramento, California, says that adolescents and preteens, that's like fifth, sixth grade, are swearing more publicly than ever, especially at school. Let's talk about it on the other side of the break with Pastor Marty Springer. We'll be right back. The Christ-centered programs you enjoy every day on AM 850 KFUO are made possible by the generous giving of friends like Gene Tyndall of Edwardsville, Lael Tornetto of Webster Groves, Reggie and Doris Weehy of Hoffman, Illinois, and Diane Westfall of St. Louis. Your faithful support for AM 850 KFUO ensures the future of our radio ministry.
Metro East Lutheran High School in Edwardsville will have their spring craft and vendor show on Saturday, March 8th from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. and Sunday, March 9th from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the high school, located at 6305 Center Grove Road in Edwardsville. There's no admission fee, and strollers are welcome to this semi-annual event to benefit Lutheran education at Metro East Lutheran High School on March 8th and 9th.
Is it possible for pigeons to read? Find out next on today's Creation Moment. And now, here's our Creation Moments host, Ian Taylor.
Mankind has been teaching birds to talk for thousands of years. Man has also been using birds to deliver messages for just as long. But new research on the intelligence of birds suggests that they might be more intelligent than we suspect. Researchers studying pigeons have learned that they can read all the letters of the alphabet, and they read them in a way similar to people. Scientists became convinced that pigeons see the world in much the same way as we do when they discovered that pigeons tend to confuse the very same letters that people do. And what's more, it took only 4 months for pigeons to learn to distinguish all the letters of the alphabet. For years, pigeons have been used to spot and reject defective items on an assembly line, where they have had better records than human beings. Based on evolutionary theory, scientists naturally conclude that the recognition of abstract forms such as letters of the alphabet requires the larger brain. But this is an assumption, and we might be reminded of the work of Harvard psychologist B.F. Skinner, who made extensive use of learned behavior using pigeons. Brain size has very little to do with intelligence. Real science and experience show otherwise and disprove evolutionary views. The only alternative is that it is the Creator who gives His creatures their intelligence.
For a printed transcript of today's program, visit our website at creationmoments.com or call us toll-free at 1-800-42-BIBLE. And be sure to join us next time for another Creation Moment, proclaiming evidence of God's truth.
Concordia Seminary, St. Louis, will be hosting the Prepare Enrich Workshop March 8th, beginning at 8:30 in the morning. Workshop topics include communication, conflict resolution, families of origin, finances, sexuality, spiritual beliefs, and many more. The workshop will be led by the Reverend Jeffrey Schubert. Call Concordia Seminary for more information on the Prepare Enrich Workshop March 8th on their campus. Registration deadline is February 25th.
The Contemporary Christian Music Ministry from Zion Lutheran Church, Litchfield, Illinois, will present the 17th annual production of The Promise. This epic musical drama is based on the biblical account of the birth, ministry, death, and resurrection of Jesus Christ in a contemporary musical setting. Dates of the performances are February 29th through March 9th. There is no charge for the drama. Reservations can be made by visiting thepromiselitchfield.com.
Well, you know, there are some folks who are old fogies, present company excluded, of course, who say things like, well, I tell you what, if I'd have said those things, my mom would have washed my mouth out with soap. Well, that doesn't happen anymore. And then there's another group that says, I'll tell you what, if I'd have talked like that at school, I'd have been in trouble when I got home and I would have got the paddle. Well, we don't do that anymore. Now it's more likely that the teacher calls home to say that Johnny's going to be disciplined because he can't play on the basketball team for a week because he was caught using the F word in school. Now the parents are going to say, well, that's kind of harsh, don't you think? That's going to affect all the other kids, and we can't do that. And, well, pretty soon Johnny will be playing basketball again. That's kind of the way it is now. And I'm stumped. I don't have a plan or an answer as to how to stem the tide here, other than to stay on your knees and keep praying to God that somehow our ever-declining potty culture will be reversed in the future. That's all I got to offer. That's not very much. I'm now, not very proud of myself.
I agree with you, Chuck, but I think we can go one step further in ensuring that the example that we set is a good one. Catching ourselves mid-sentence. I don't need to say that. You know, Lord, I'm sorry that I took your name in vain. Breaking ourselves of the habit and setting the example, and like I said before, pray like you said, pray like crazy.
One of the things that seems to be true about our culture, we were talking about this in between here and the break, and that is even just listening to certain radio programs, well, I'm really PO'd.
Mm-hmm. You know,
they'll say things like that, and it's just standard fare. That's everybody seems to be pretty much okay with that kind of language. Certainly the television and the movies, a magazine, you can't hardly look at the magazine covers in the grocery store. All these things have their influence as we apparently plumb the depths to see just where the bottom is, where the bottom of the gutter is in our culture. We're talking about maybe one child, one student at a time trying to restrain or hold back against that. But even if we were to do that, Pastor, that's pretty far from Philippians 4:8, which says, whatever is lovely, whatever, you know that
sure.
That verse, I don't have it memorized, but we should think on these things. It's not enough, apparently, to just try to refrain from going into the gutter with everybody else in the culture. But we actually need to turn and aspire to things that are lovely, to things that are good. You talk about impossible. How do we reverse ourselves so that we actually are headed in the right direction as opposed to just restricting ourselves from going headlong into the gutter?
I think probably it's the aspect of, again, setting the example, praying for the Lord's guidance in that situation, certainly aspiring, as Paul said, to aspire to things that are noble and good. And I think it depends on how we correct a situation. You know, I'm not saying beat somebody up. I'm not saying, go through this great act of indignation. I think it's saying to them, I don't appreciate that kind of talk. I would appreciate it if you didn't talk like that around me. You know, and then take the hit if necessary, prude, old-fashioned, whatever. But, you know, you're talking about my Lord here. You're talking about something that's important to me. And
oh, boy, you talk about OMG.
I know.
I didn't even think about that. Jesus Christ.
Oh, that's, things, I know, I
you
know. And that's,
in the movies, it's just.
I don't think there's any difference between saying Jesus Christ, you know, in a fit of exasperation, then there is the big kahuna,
yeah,
the GD. We're saying the same thing, and both of them are unacceptable. You know, both of them are bad.
This article says, adolescents and preteens are swearing more publicly than ever, especially at school, experts say. It's conversational swearing in the hallways and in the classroom. It's on the rise, according to Timothy Jay, one of the leading scholars on cursing in the United States. I don't know how you get a degree in this, but apparently Timothy J. has one. Teens are more likely to drop casual expletives or fillers than the generation before them and have more trouble adjusting their conversation to fit their audience. That means adults, especially strangers who cannot sanction the teens, hear more of the same language that the teens' friends hear, according to Jay, who has written something called Why We Curse, and another work called Cursing in America. He estimates that the average adolescent, I don't know how he would know this, but this is apparently his field of expertise, he estimates that the average adolescent, teenager, uses roughly 80 to 90 swear words a day, which means that if you're awake for 16 hours, you know, you're swearing 2, 3, 4 times an hour.
I believe it.
That's a potty mouth, isn't
it? That really is. The thing that I picked up on is that he was talking about filler, and that's what I had alluded to before. It's like, I don't know what to say, so I'm just going to say this. I'm in the habit of saying this, and I think potty mouth, bad language, is a bad habit, and I think it's a habit that you can break. I knew a little old lady who's since gone to heaven, would have given you the shirt off her back, but she and her husband owned a farm. They were around farmhands all the time. She fed the farmhands and got into the habit of potty mouth.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just a habit with her. In her case, I think because of her age, everybody just kind of looked the other way. But it's a habit. And in the same way that habits develop, they can be broken.
505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Listeners, what do you think? Is there any way that we can stem the tide of conversational swearing among our teenagers, or our adults for that matter? Let's talk with Joe. Hi, Joe. You're on the Bible study.
Hi. I work in construction, and I think it is habitual using that language because people use it as adjectives, and they can't think of anything better to describe what they're talking about. And anyway, it is something that you can change, sure. But I was calling specifically, my 5-year-old daughter spit one out the other day, and I don't know where she got it. And my response, well, one of my other kids right away said, "Jesus doesn't want you to talk like that." And I said, "You know, I don't know if Jesus really cares if you use that word, because it does have a meaning. But the problem is that you belong to Jesus, and that everybody you know knows that you belong to Jesus. So the problem is that they're going to misunderstand when you use that kind of language, because most people think it is bad." And I was just wondering, you know, I've been thinking about it since I told her that, if that was accurate to tell her that Jesus might not really care if you use it or not. But well, it's more how you look to other people that is the issue.
Joe, do you want to stay on the line or listen on the radio?
Well, yeah, if there's anything, I am kind of asking to
sure. Okay.
understand it better.
I appreciate your concerns, Joe. I don't think I would say Jesus doesn't care. Because in that personal relationship, he cares about everything that we say and do. I think you're certainly moving in the right direction when you say you belong to Jesus, and that doesn't set a good example to others. I think I'd go back if I had the chance to do it and say that hurts Jesus' feelings for us to talk like that, because that isn't what he would want us to do. He certainly forgives that, and you want to put that aspect in of his forgiveness. And then build on the aspect of what you said. We belong to Jesus, and we're called upon to set that higher standard. Now, you're going to have to bring that down to that 5-year-old's level.
Right.
But I would say that's the gist of it.
Right. That's what the people that I see use that language, the adults, that's what it seems like. It gets to be a habit.
Oh, it is. Absolutely.
They can't speak without using it.
Right.
And that's what I was, I guess, trying to strike a balance with my daughter, to where just because you quit saying that, I guess what I was concerned about also is just to have an outside compliance, but still not really get the heart of the issue.
Right, right. I think, I'm going to use the old Lutheran adage here, balance law and gospel. You know, you certainly say, yes, Jesus is disappointed by this. He still loves us and he forgives us,
right.
But he wants us to do better. He wants us to avoid language like that, because that hurts him and it sends the wrong message to those who hear us.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Thanks for calling in, Joe.
I wonder if any of our listeners have successfully dealt with this in their own experience.
I'd appreciate hearing that.
You can share
sure.
an experience about, I remember when my son was a teenager, and here's how we handled it, and it worked.
Well, you mentioned the washing the mouth out with soap. I had a lot happen to me. I don't think my mother ever washed my mouth out with soap, but there's a couple of times that I thought she was going to drop kick me into next week. So that made the impression.
Now, one thing that's in play here that I think complicates the situation, I'm going to represent this as best I can based on my own personal experience. This certainly is, I'm not a cursing expert like Mr. Timothy J. here.
I might pick up those books, Chuck. I'd be interested to see what he has to say.
But older folks over the years, sitting in a Bible class or having a discussion like this, almost to a man or a woman when the subject came up, said that when they were being raised, when they were in confirmation instruction, they were told by their pastors, so they took this as to be pretty much God's truth, that it was even wrong to say something like gosh or heck. Or, of course, W.C. Fields, who used to say, Godfrey Daniels. We knew what he was substituting there.
Absolutely.
Pastors, a generation later, I hear pastors say, gosh and heck, things like that all the time. So something's changed here. And if these things can change, then who's to say that the F word, which was universally considered to be a vulgarity a generation ago, is just hip with your 21st century sixth grader?
Things do change, but God's word and the commandments don't change. You know, again, I can't look into somebody's heart and I can't judge their intentions. But the way it was explained to me is, okay, you're saying gosh or you're saying heck, what are you thinking? I can't judge that. You can't judge that. Only the person who's thinking that and saying something else. We're not going to fool God. I think it depends on how you look at it. It does sound better, I suppose, to those around us to hear that rather than the F-bomb or, you know, the OMG or whatever the person is saying. It all boils down to intent and what the person is thinking versus what they're saying.
I want to ask you to sort this one out for me, because I have, for a long time, I have officiated basketball, all levels, from fourth graders all the way through adults. I used to officiate in a recreational league, a men's league, and I knew a lot of the players who were in that league. They weren't necessarily friends of mine, but they were acquaintances. There was one guy there who I happen to know was a Lutheran Christian who didn't particularly like something that happened, or maybe it was a call I made, I don't know, it was a pretty long time ago. And his response was, Jesus. And I said to him on the floor, watch your mouth. We're not going to have that here. We made a trip down to the other end. We came back to where we were, and something else happened he didn't like. And he said it again. And I know, I'm pretty sure, I can't read hearts, but I've been doing this for a while, that the purpose was to test my resolve as to whether or not I would allow that. I gave him a technical foul on that occasion. And he took exception to that after the game. He said that was petty. There was no need for that. And I said, well, you may think it was petty, but it's forbidden by the rules. The rules specifically say that profanity and inappropriate speech are not allowed. Well, he argued aggressively with me that saying Jesus Christ on the basketball floor was, there was nothing wrong with that. Now, this was a man who I know had gone through all the confirmation instruction and the whole business. I was pretty dumbfounded. But I guess you know that when you make the case that saying "Oh my God" is out of bounds, there are a lot of people who don't think you have a clue as to
sure,
what you're talking about.
I think that's right.
How do you deal with it?
Again, the impression that I'm getting is that you also picked up on the tone of the person. Obviously, he was exasperated when he said it, and I'm gonna.
He wasn't praying, Pastor.
There you go. There you go. That's my point. And I think you're absolutely right. He was testing you, or he wouldn't have said it again.
But he thought it was an absolutely neutral act. And he thought that if he had said the F word or something like that, he would understand why that was wrong. But he thought that saying Jesus Christ and saying it loud enough for everybody to hear it, it's not something he said under his breath.
Right.
For me to penalize that was just as petty and as nonsensical as it could be.
And it wasn't, from my opinion. I would have backed you on it. He would have had, regardless, he would have had to submit himself to your authority as the official at the game. And if he didn't like it, then you guys could agree to disagree, but you stood up for what you believed was right.
So this article here says elementary school teachers, that's your wife.
Yes.
It's third grade, is that what you're
yes.
teaching? I hope you talk with her about this.
I'm going to, believe me.
After to get home tonight. Elementary school teachers report that children are using more offensive language at school than they have in the past, says Jay, who is compiling data for a study he will complete in the fall examining preteens and swearing. They have been breaking the rules at school more frequently in the last 10 years. Jay is a psychology professor at the Massachusetts College of Liberal Arts in North Adams, Massachusetts. He's been studying swearing trends since the 1970s. Our language values are shifting, and it's just different, not better or worse, he says. I think it's worse.
No, I'm.
But he is, after all, the expert.
It would seem to me like it would be worse. My curiosity has piqued. I may just get those books. I'd like to see what data he's gathered and what he can teach about that. You mentioned about my wife. Certainly, teaching in the Lutheran day school system, you would think that ideally she would hear less of that. I think there was a time when you could assume that. Not so much anymore. And that's why they do have guidelines regarding language and what's acceptable and what isn't acceptable. And that's another one of those situations where I think the Christian day school has to be held to a higher standard and has to hold their students to a higher standard.
Okay, now I'm going to make confession.
Okay.
Because I feel guilty about this.
Now, I might be able to absolve you. Let me hear what we'll see about absolution.
It is true that on some occasions when I'm in a group that, whether you're on the golf course or you're at dinner or whatever it is, maybe you're at a basketball game with a bunch of other people that you know, and somebody says, oh, Jesus, you know, because it's obvious that they're not praying. But I haven't said anything. And I think to myself, I probably should say, well, that's my Lord. You know, I don't know what, it doesn't seem like anything comes to my mind that would communicate what needs to be communicated, but isn't going to throw cold water on the whole setting, you know, and ruin the whole evening or whatever it is that you're doing. And so I come away thinking I probably should have said something there. I didn't know what to say. I didn't say anything. I didn't defend my Lord, and I feel bad about it.
I think that we've all been there, even as a pastor. I think we've all been there and done that. And certainly all of us can look back at events in our lives and say, well, I could have done that better, could have, would have, you know, should have. I think that there are ways to handle it. And you said, you know, don't throw cold water on the whole event. It might be one of those where you just say, privately, offline, as it were, to the person, you know, kind of tone it down a little bit. What do you mean?
Well, see, I just can't imagine myself saying that in a social group.
No, that's why I think I would wait for an opportunity to do it privately. You know, I certainly want to stand up for my Lord, and I don't want people maligning him.
We're getting short on time here. You're a pastor. We talked about the youth group. We talked about a situation where it's kind of an informal, where you overhear something, and so you deal with that. You deal with it more or less privately without calling out or humiliating the person who's involved. I want to put you in the principal's shoes for a moment, because this article says that this is where this has really begun to emerge, is in elementary schools. Elementary schools have rules. They probably have a handbook. They probably say, we don't tolerate profanity, we don't tolerate vulgarities, and there's discipline for that. So now I want to put you in the principal's shoes. You're walking the hall. You're not walking up to the church for youth group, you're walking the hall. And there's some seventh graders down there talking about the game they lost last night and the blah, blah, blah refs that cost them the game. And you hear the principal now. What do you do? Do you punish? That's my question.
I don't know that there is a cookie-cutter answer for it. I think that probably the first step would, again, be to take the individual aside. let them know that that's unacceptable. Do what you can to emphasize that.
What about the other seventh grade boys who are agreeing with the assessment and are laughing? Maybe they didn't use any of the words that were offensive, but they're certainly comfortable in that environment, and there's nobody in the group saying, oh, Johnny, you shouldn't talk like that.
Right.
What are you going to do with those kids?
Right. That's tough, Chuck. There's no doubt about it. You know, as I think about it, maybe taking him aside, maybe using an opportunity to say something to the group. I don't know. Maybe that's the reason I'm a pastor and not a principal. I don't know.
Okay, so you take Johnny into your principal's office there, and you say, Johnny, I've heard what you said there in the hall. And you need to know that we don't permit that kind of language here at St. Paul Auto Herculaneum Imperial School. And he looks you right in the eye and he goes, my dad says it all the time.
That doesn't make it right.
You think that's going
to
work?
No, but I think emphasizing to him.
You may have just empowered Johnny, the little rebellious snot, to go home and tell his old man off because the
principal told me, possibly.
Yeah.
But again, it's what your dad does at home is between you and him. Okay. What happens at school is between the two of us, and that's what we're going to talk about, and that is unacceptable, and it will not be tolerated. And I better not hear you say it again.
Okay. Message delivered. Now the phone rings. It's Johnny's dad.
Yes.
Who do you think you are?
Absolutely. I think I'm your son's principal. I think that I'm doing what I believe is right and what I'm empowered by the school to do, what I believe is my responsibility. You know, I didn't stab you in the back, Dad. Okay? I said that is improper language for this environment, and I'm not going to tolerate it.
If Johnny's dad is a member of your parish, and you were to say something like, well, you know, I overheard Johnny, he says SOB in the hallway yesterday, and then he tells me he got that from you. Are you going to say, I'm going to share this with Pastor Springer, and you'll probably be getting a call?
Probably.
Is that appropriate?
Probably. Probably is. You know, and again, I would look for the opportunity to say, be careful what you say in front of your kids. You know, watch your language and the example that you're setting for your kids.
You don't have a parish bar of soap there for the for the adults, do you?
I don't think anybody washes mouth out with soap anymore.
Pastor Marty Springer, thank you, sir.
Always good to be here, Chuck. I'll look forward to the next time.
Very good. We'll call you again.
Good.
We're talking about potty mouth today on Ask the Pastor. We're in Matthew 20. We finish that chapter tomorrow here on the Bible Study. Pastor John Lukowski, thanks for listening.
Listen to Chuck Ratherton and guests Monday through Friday at the same time on the Bible Study. The Bible Study is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for the Bible Study to continue. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can contact us on the internet at kfuo.org. For a free copy of the Bible Study, please visit the audio archive section of our homepage. That's kfuo.org. The Bible Study is a broadcast service of Worldwide KFUO.